Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is Brian.
This is Daryl.
And this is
Carlo.
Carlo, welcome back, Carlo.
Thank you.
It's been several years.
A couple years.
So,
yeah, I really just showed up to get my royalties check from the last episode, but yeah,
that bounced. We don't make money on this show on purpose. So, to the legal copyright troll law firm that came after us, they know very well we don't make money. And I appreciated wasting between 60 and 100 hours of their time.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Well, you know, yeah. Well, we're talking Ghostbusters, so we figured we would get the only real Ghostbuster of Ohio that we know. I can't see you.
So it's kind of weird. Yeah.
So why don't you slide the chair this way? Because you've got plenty of cord for the microphone. So Daryl's like in the comfy chair. You're going to hear it drag it for a second. What was the show where he like moved the chair all like passive aggressively? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, it was Game of Thrones.
Yeah, right.
With Tyrion.
We're in Tyrion, yeah. So... Daryl's just pulling a Tyrion. There we go. Now I can see you. All right. So we are going to be reviewing Ghostbusters Exposition. I mean, Frozen Empire. And before we get into that, we're going to talk about the Acolyte. But before we get into all that, Daryl, how are you?
Doing very well.
So March Madness is here.
Yeah.
Kentucky lost to Oakland. I was so happy.
Yeah. I wasn't happy. My girlfriend's a huge Kentucky fan, so.
You can still be happy. I mean, it's UK. They are, you know, they deserved it. But
are people even following the men's tournament?
Oh, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge thing.
I figure everybody's watching Iowa.
Dude, on Thursday people are definitely tuning into every Caitlin Clark game. But like on Thursday I had both tablets open, one on Max and one on Paramount Plus, and I had the games going, and then I had like ESPN up with the tracker on the TV, and
I just
was working from the couch.
We have YouTube TV, and we'll have the four stream, yeah. Which is so cool.
Oh, nice. So I turned it on just in time to watch BYU lose, which made me happy. So, but yeah, enough sports talk. Carlo?
Yes.
Tell everybody about the real Ghostbusters Ohio for a few minutes, because like it's an important organization that does cool stuff.
I mean, there's organizations all over, you know, it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, I will say this. Since the pandemic, I really kind of not been participating with the franchises as much.
Okay.
Between the real Ghostbusters of Ohio, I would say they're significantly the largest of the groups. Columbus also has a pretty large org. Dayton. Would love to get something started in the Cincinnati area, Queen City.
Yeah.
But...
especially with all the haunted shit around here.
Oh, yeah. And that's usually when the groups come out.
Yeah. And does Busted make you feel good?
It sure does. yeah. Oh. Dent, there's some good trade in that.
Yeah.
And they'll... draw like Ecto Ohio will show up. They'll let him put the sirens on.
Nice.
Without a police escort.
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
You do know the building you're sitting in right now is allegedly haunted.
I'm sure it is.
I don't believe it. I've never seen a ghost. I don't believe in ghosts.
They believe in you.
Should though. I mean, congratulations to them for believing in me. I appreciate the support.
On a side note with the whole haunted thing, I do have the Weird Ohio and Weird Kentucky and Weird U.S. books, which are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, the one thing up in Miami,
the motorcycle.
Yeah, that was...
I never saw it.
That was... I never even actually...
And I went and everybody else saw it and I didn't see it. And I'm like, you are all lying. Like, you lied first and all of you lied because you want to fit in.
I never went to look for it.
So,
but
yeah,
are we talking urban legend haunts?
Kind of. I mean, so up in Oxford, there's this like part of the road where, like, if you go at a certain time of night, you see you're supposed to see the headlight of a motorcycle of a guy who crashed on the road 100 years ago at this point.
Okay.
And it's like, I went three times, never saw it once. And then the people who did say it were definitely people who were just followers. Mm-hmm. And like, they didn't like have the conviction to stand up and be like, no, I didn't see it. They're like, I definitely saw
it. Well, of course. I've had a couple people.
But it was Miami. So. Yeah,
I had a couple people say that. But then I had one guy say he saw, he didn't know what he saw. So I would find that more. And again, this is from, good God, 20 years ago. So how he actually said it.
At least 24 years ago.
That's wrong. Because that was like, this was like in 98.
So it would have been 26 years ago. Because we are old.
I don't look it.
We are all born within like a month of each other.
Oh,
you're November.
October.
Yeah, so 2 months of each other.
Best month.
No, dude. December, Sagittarius, best month.
Mm. Yeah, but you get gypped.
Yeah. Do we though?
Well, some people. Well,
I mean, I definitely did every year. Yeah. But,
yeah. Well, growing up, I would get one. I would usually get one little thing for my birthday, and then for Christmas, that's one.
For my birthday, I would get that. We're gonna get you at Christmas, and then at Christmas, when I got the same thing as everybody else, I'm like, hold on.
It's not even debatable. October, so, best month.
It's got Halloween, worst holiday.
Come on.
I mean, it kind of falls in with what we're talking about.
It does. Yeah. True.
Well, and I will say this, kind of going back to your original question.
Yeah.
You know, how are the franchises doing? I will say this, accessibility to, getting into the various forms of Ghostbusters cosplay and any of that, like, best it's ever been.
Yeah. I feel like compared to like the 501st or things like that,
yeah,
the main barrier, I think the Ghostbusters is probably the lowest barrier to entry.
Exactly.
But the highest barrier to entry for the Ghostbusters is probably the Proton Pack. But Hasbro has gone so far and above with the Ghostbusters gear that you can still buy. Well, not even the HasLab stuff, just the stuff that you can still buy, like the little PK reader and stuff like that.
Well, that was HasLab. Really cool.
Was it?
Yes.
But you can still buy it.
Well, I know what they did because I'm a Hasbro Pulse guy.
Yeah.
And I know what they did a few months ago is one of those things.
They did a reissue.
Yeah. And I think it was a Proton Pack.
Yeah.
I just happened to see it because I remember when it was in the HasLab.
Yeah.
And, did pretty well.
But I think...
Well, it's not even that, too. Yeah. Like, Spirit. Are you familiar? Oh. Yeah.
Spirit Halloween?
Yeah, Spirit Halloween.
Yeah.
Like, they do an okay...
Nice.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like... The thing I like most about Spirit is just they are a zombie organization.
Oh, yeah.
And they just take over dead buildings.
It's like they just show up in an old Michaels.
It's like, this is amazing. JCPenney's. A lot of old JCPenney's. Yeah. In the old, it used to be Borders. They did that.
Or like Toys R Us.
Yeah. It makes me giggle with the Toys R Us. I am one of these people who is not nostalgic for Toys R Us because everything was 25% more there than everywhere else. And it's like...
Yeah, it absolutely
was. And like, I remember going to a few when they would do the Star Wars releases early and we would go early and like... We'd be like the fifth person in line and we'd be walking in and the first person in line was walking out with a cart literally full of every action figure that was on a peg back there. It's like, you're only supposed to be able to get four total on like between these couple hours so everybody can get them. And then they'd let the motherfucker check out. So.
Yeah. Peak Toys R Us was like, and 86. You were just talking about X-Men.
Yeah. 92.
Pre-McFarlane years where, toy collecting was not a...
I am nostalgic for KB Toys.
Mm. Oh, KB
Toys. KB Toys was legendary. Anyway, all right, let's...
Off script.
Always. this is always like the first 5 to 10 minutes of the show. Actually, we're right at about 10 minutes, so this is perfect. All right, let's hop into it. The Acolyte. The trailer came out this week. This is the... the series from Harvey Weinstein's former assistant, Leslie Headland. That can't be stated enough. I'm not just saying it because Leslie Headland is a monster who was the assistant for Harvey Weinstein, but Leslie Headland was the assistant for Harvey Weinstein is a monster. Yeah. So, all right. So I made you watch it, Carlo. Like, obviously, Daryl and I were watching it. You made the
suggestion.
So, yeah. Well, yeah, you didn't have to watch it. You could have been like, I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to just sit there in silence while YouTube bash it. So,
that's all good.
All right. So, The Acolyte is a series coming out later this year on June 4th with a 2-episode premiere. I'm actually shocked they're not dropping this all at once. This is a show nobody wants. Nobody asked for it. Nobody wants it. And it's another one of these canon breaking Disney Plus series that we can do better. I watched the trailer and then I made the mistake. I accidentally clicked on Star Wars Theory because I really didn't want to like get his point of view on it until after we talked about it. But before I could turn it off, he made a really excellent point. Everyone in the show, whoever the Sith or Dark Jedi, Dark Force user is, and all the Jedi who see this person have to die. Because in episode one, the Jedi Council, the Sith have been gone for 1,000 years, is a line in canon. Mm-hmm. This movie takes place 100 years before this. Right. So Yoda's apparently in the show. Chewbacca's apparently in the show. So the eye roll is the perfect response to that, by the way. Yoda better not see this. I mean, I already have a bone to pick with Yoda for like letting the Jedi Order down anyway. If this is the case, it's like, maybe Yoda was the Sith Lord.
Is Yaddle.
I mean, Yaddle has been like massively disrespected by the Star Wars like community. Like not the fans, just like Star Wars like writers and stuff in general. Mm. She's had 3 different deaths. With the Tales of the Jedi, they rewrote her death from when she saved Anakin, which was a great death.
Yeah.
So
that was a great episode.
It was Tales from the Jedi really left me wanting an Adam Driver as young Dooku, like series, movie, whatever. Like I'll take what I can get, especially with Adam Driver, but make us forget about Kylo Ren as much as possible. All right. But The Acolyte. So the trailer, to me, it looks like a whole bunch of cosplay, like which I do think is not as much a dig on the show as it is as how far the cosplay community has come with Star Wars. Mm. But the first thing you notice is the diversity or the lack thereof, right? It's
painful.
It's
legitimately painful because there's no way you accidentally do this.
Yeah.
Like that, the first thing, and again, this is just the first, 20 seconds of the trailer when you see the
just kids.
These
are the kids, obviously, who probably work for the people at Lucasfilm at this point.
Right.
Like, these aren't actors because they're just sitting there with their eyes closed, except for the one alien who couldn't close his eyes.
It's like, close your eyes.
Did you see that one? The little guy, close your eyes.
Crying.
And he's just got a little tear because he can't close his eyes. But
yeah, it's extremely obvious, and it takes me out of the moment because you just have say 12 or, mm-hmm. or 10 little younglings or what have you.
Right.
You have 3 aliens, you know, 1 black kid, and then the rest are girls.
And a bunch of but they're mix of like Asian, black, white, whatever.
Right.
I think there's a black like male.
Yeah, it is. Youngling. It is.
But it's a very Asian inspired show, apparently. So that's fine. I thought it was funny because I had trouble differentiating between Carrie Ann Moss and the guy from Squid Game because their haircut is so similar.
Oh my gosh.
What?
I didn't have that problem.
I don't know. But
I did not realize at first he was from the guy from the Squid Game either.
Well, that's what I asked Brian.
I've never seen Squid Game.
Yeah, so. I saw it, but I was.
I thought Squid Game was like Saw. It was just like torture porn, and I was like, I'm not. I don't like. No, I'm not going to watch that just in general. So, but I'm. Here's the thing. Is this a bad teaser trailer? Probably not. Is it worse than The Crow? No. because the new Crow teaser trailer is one of the worst things I've ever seen. And I really hope they played it before the American Association of Magical Negroes or whatever it is, because there's a magical Negro in the Crow trailer. It's the black guy. He's like, you were brought back for it. It's like, this is what that movie's talking about. Like, if that movie would not have been so mishandled, like, it would have been funny.
Yeah.
So, but like the Crow is like, yeah, let's just do that. But no, here's the problem I had with this trailer the most is at the end, the voiceover, it's like, it's not about good or bad. It's about who wields the power. Bitch, Star Wars is only about good and bad. It's light and dark. Mm. So,
and again, they're trying to be creative or modern with trying to look, put the lens on the bad guy has never been the underdog or whatever.
Oh, her comic. Yeah. At no point in time have the Jedi ever had this much advantage over the Sith. There's been two of them for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
There's been thousands of
Jedi. Tell me you don't know Star Wars lore without telling me you don't know Star Wars.
It was Plagueis and Palpatine. Palpatine kills Plagueis. It was Palpatine and Maul. Obi, you know.
Allegedly
killed Maul.
Well, he actually did.
Eventually.
Yeah.
And then it was Palps and Dukes. And then Anakin kills Dukes. And so then it's Palps and Anakin. You know. And then there's no Sith. And then there's really no Jedi.
Yeah.
So.
But was the rule of two present in High Republic?
Yes.
Because this is High Republic.
The rule of two has been around for like 10,000 years at this point. Or 1,000. About 1,000 years at this point. So, but here's the thing. KOTOR.
Yeah.
That's the time frame that we should be doing stuff in. If we're going to do anything before, because you can't break canon if you fuck up KOTOR.
I am of the mind
now. Knights of the Old Republic, for anybody who doesn't.
I'm of the mind, and I've seen enough over the last 15 years of these, of the cinematics they do for the games that take place around that in that time period. I would rather them do a cinematic and take it out of, and I know this is, you know, this is fluff talk because it won't happen.
Right.
Take it out of Disney's hands.
Sure.
Because to your point, this trailer, it's not terrible.
Right.
You know,
it's a teaser.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't even call it a trailer.
This teaser, it's not terrible. It has some terrible stuff in it, but overall, it's not terrible.
Yeah.
And I, you know, as much as I dig at Star Wars currently, I will say that.
Yeah.
Now, do I think the show's going to be terrible?
Yes.
Yes, I do. And if I'm wrong, just like I was with X-Men 97, I will absolutely say
it. What was your response to my, what was your initial thought when I texted you my thoughts on it?
Oh, X-Men 97? Yeah.
Were you like,
Yeah, I was shocked.
We've got an apology to make when we review that.
Yeah. So I almost wanted to say, Brian, blink if someone has a gun to your head. But yes.
I kind of want to try and get Bo on the phone and just literally apologize to him on air.
I absolutely.
So, but course it's just two episodes, so we don't know. But no, when it comes to this, it's I have zero trust in Lucasfilm. I have zero trust in monsters who served up unwitting women to another monster. So there's that. And listening to how, like, the most recent interview, how she cast the show, it was like, oh, I like this diverse actor in said diverse role that was not very good in, like, whatever, other than, I guess, the guy from Squid Game. But the girl, or I guess the non-binary person who is the acolyte, played Rue in The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. And she came out as non-binary after getting this role. And it's like, that is the biggest virtue signal ever.
Yes.
Plain and simple. Yeah. You know, Star Wars is getting to the point where it's a dead brand. They keep breaking their own canon, which I think Obi-Wan was the last straw for a lot of people.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So,
I have no faith in it. And if they prove me wrong, they prove me wrong. But they have not proven me wrong with Star Wars.
Because here's what we need if they want us to watch Star Wars in a serialized form as a television show instead of serialized movies, Give me 8 episodes of all killer.
Yes.
No filler, all killer. Because did you watch Ahsoka?
No.
Okay. So Ahsoka is 8 episodes. There is an episode and a half's worth of killer in the show. And then 6.5 episodes of filler. And they could have done it in an email. They could have just emailed us, this is the cool shit.
Yeah.
And I've been like, yes, just make it a comic book. You know?
But you refuse to watch Andor. Or Andor, sorry.
Yeah. Which, well, I watch Andor, and I've told him about this. He's heard this multiple times.
Yeah.
I will say that's an exception because Andor, the first 3 episodes, they were kind of slow. They weren't bad. And then especially, I'd say the last half of Andor, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So it's on, like, you know, when it was on Hulu, I started to watch it and I was just bored to tears. And I was like, I just can't, like, it's 8 episode series now, right? Mm-hmm. There's no more giving it 3 episodes and moving on. If it doesn't catch me in the pilot for an 8 episode series, I'm not watching it.
Yeah, Andor was 12. Simple.
Was it 12? Yeah. Oh, so I should have given it 2. Yeah. All right. But so,
the first 2-3 episodes were very slow.
Yeah, but when they were like 16 to 22 episode series, I'll give it 3 episodes.
Yeah.
And I'll give it 3 episodes in earnest and like be like, yeah, I'm going to sit here, like, even if I don't. Because here's the thing. I am of the mindset that the pilot is nearly universally the worst episode of a series.
Because there's so much going on. There's so much they're trying to do.
Yeah, they're just trying to get picked up. They're trying to get picked up.
Yeah.
Usually the 4th episode ends up being like my favorite episode of a first season. Like with Battlestar, we talk about 33 a lot.
Mm.
That's the 4th episode of the show.
Technically, yeah.
And is the best. It's the best. It's arguably the best episode of the show, of the whole series. So, because there's nothing like 33 that had aired on TV to that point. Mm-hmm. So. Now, like, there's exceptions like Supernatural, which I think is the best pilot in history.
That pilot was amazing.
So, I don't know if you've ever watched Supernatural. It was 5 awesome seasons.
Yeah.
So.
Caught a couple.
Yeah. The first, the 5 season just run of that show is up there. It's epic.
He does this all the time.
But it's really cool because they did, like, 10 years after the show ended, they did this, like, really cool, like, reunion episode where, like, they killed Dean off.
It was 15 seasons.
So, I like that fan fiction that they did for Buffy those 2 seasons. So, anyway.
Once again.
All right. So, yeah. So, The Acolyte comes out on June 4th. So, we'll see. I mean, I'm going to make Daryl watch it first, and then he can tell me because I'm...
Fine. Ow.
It's your Disney Plus account anyway.
I'm just having Obi-Wan flashbacks and how I just...
Okay, so how I've been watching Obi-Wan, I really enjoyed it because I'm watching Charlie Hopkins, like, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Anakin watching it.
Those are great.
He does the deepfakes. Yeah,
those are great.
And, like, yes, I've actually been enjoying it because of their response to things. So, anyway. All right, let's move on to the main event. Why Carlo is here with us.
Let's talk about
Ghostbusters Exposition. I mean, Frozen Empire. Okay, so what should we do for the out of 10 for this week?
Oh, we're hopping right into
it. Yeah, I like to do it up front. Oh. So let's do out of 10 that runtime felt like 5 years.
115 years.
Let's see.
Minutes.
All right, Carlo, out of 10.
So you're making me go first.
Do you want to go last?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
All right, Daryl, out of 10.
4.5 out of 10.
4.5 out of 10. So we'll get into deeper, but just like this is your first impression because we have been out of the theater for about an hour.
Yes.
What, like, just why?
So first impressions is that I actually like the story more than I liked Afterlife. I watched Afterlife last night, so I did like the story of this more. Mm-hmm. And I liked, there were some moments that were good. There had some actually good moments of not necessarily jump scares, but there was some creepiness in it. They lost it, however, because they could not decide on the tone. And
I blame Paul Rudd for that.
And partially, but also Nadim, which is, what is his name?
Camille Nanjiani.
Yes. His character could have been very cool, but.
Yeah.
Yes. Ooh.
Yeah. All right. So I'm doing just straight 4 out of 10. I had a 5 after Thursday night, and then I've been thinking about it nonstop. I rewatched some of Afterlife that I kind of had.
Like, after Thursday?
Yeah. So just kind of going back and like checking on some things for the Phoebe character in particular.
Yep.
And then it just like, it was still boring. Like where the stuff that was boring was still boring. And the pacing, like I get if you want to do a deliberately paced show, like Succession is like deliberately paced, right? And it's slow, but it's not painfully slow. It's like you watch and it's like, holy shit, an hour passed and it's already over. This one is slow at the beginning and it's painfully slow. And you're like, oh my God, only 40 minutes have passed. And there's still an hour and 15 minutes left in this movie. Or an hour and 10 minutes, whatever. And then everything that's in the trailer is in the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
All right. So, Carlo.
All right. Well, we should add, so you and I saw this on Thursday. Yes,
Thursday.
Yeah. So this is our second viewing. My hot take at that
point. I took a point off from what I did on Thursday.
Yeah.
So
we both baselined at 5.
Yeah.
I would say the second viewing, I went up half a point. So I'll say 5. We'll say 5.75.
Ooh, 5.75.
I'm going to give it, wow. I'm going to give it a nudge.
All right. Fair. I'm not judging you.
I'm being stared at.
I mean, I know. I'm looking at you like I'm judging you, but I'm not. You know, judging
you. I do. In all fairness, and this was even in our Afterlife review.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while I am a fan, I can be very critical from a filmmaking.
There's nothing wrong with being. See, I think being like Ghostbusters is your favorite IP.
1984 is my favorite film. Oh, and it, right. I should add, yeah. It's the 40th anniversary this year.
Yeah. Okay. But so like, I expect a more critical lens out of someone who loves it, you know? And I think you are giving a critical lens. I'm not saying that you're not. So it's just,
I hear,
Gil Keenan. What has Gil Keenan done? Like, you know, it's one of these things.
He co-wrote Afterlife.
Yeah, he was the executive producer. So Jason, he directed Monster House, City of Embers, Poltergeist 2015, Afterlife, A Boy Called Christmas. I've never even heard of that. Mm-hmm. Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. Like, he does not have like this massive resume, right?
You know, and pedigree, to me, it doesn't really matter.
No, but pedigree is one thing. Like, but like he's only got one short film from 2002 under his belt too. Like, he's got 2002, 2006, 2008, and then nothing until 2015, and then two things in 21, one thing in 24, and he's got some to be announced Saturday Night Live 1975 biopic coming out at some point. Yeah. But he's not directing, he's just writing and producing. But he didn't direct Afterlife, obviously. That was Ivan, but
that was Jason.
Sorry.
Which I honestly surprising that Jason didn't come back to helm this one.
So, but yeah, so it's just like he also did one episode of the Scream TV show on MTV. Mm-hmm. But like when I'm looking at this stuff, like Poltergeist is a horror movie. Like, where was that sensibility? Like it's a ghost movie. It should be scarier. Like
don't disagree.
I think like the one when they were in the, like, just kind of jumping ahead, when they were in Winston's like secret ghost busting lab, there was a ghost in there that had the same character design as the final boss, just without the horns, like before he got the horns.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was like, so when we saw like, what's his name? Gargamel, Gargalek.
Garaka.
Garaka.
Garlic.
Gargamel.
Yes.
When Gargamel showed up. No. When Garakic, did I say it right?
Garaka.
Garaka showed up. It's like Maraca, but Garaka with a G. Got it.
All right. Baraka from Mortal Kombat, but with a
Street Fighter. Baraka. Yeah.
Street Fighter.
He kind of had the teeth. No. Baraka is Mortal Kombat.
With the.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the teeth.
You're thinking Blanca.
Blanca, that's what I was thinking. Anyway, but
And I shared this with you about the Center for Paranormal Research. Mm-hmm. I think they're calling it something like this. Daryl, did you get a 13 Ghosts vibe from that? Are you familiar? Tony Shalhoub.
I remember 13 Ghosts. I know the movie you're talking about. I don't recall anything about it, honestly.
So for the audience that have seen it.
See, I haven't seen 13 Ghosts, so I didn't get that vibe. Well, yeah,
man.
I don't like horror movies. Like, I'm just not. I get bored with them. Did you call me a baby? I don't like horror movies because I don't like to be scared.
It's not
like,
scary,
you know. It's just
that
like,
one's gory, though.
Yeah,
one's
like gory. The torture porn stuff. I'm 100% out on.
Yeah, so. I like the idea of horror movies, but usually they disappoint.
Yeah,
satirical horror movie, I'm down.
Tony Shalhoub and Matthew Lillard. Come on,
I love Matthew Lillard.
Watch,
But anyway, I'm feeling a little woozy here.
So. The reason I said that is, you know, they have ghosts out and they're kind of observing them and, you know, kind of like a ghost zoo.
Okay. And that's what they had.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think the movie starts off exciting with the Hell's Kitchen sewer dragon. Well,
let's talk about like the cold opener or the opening. We're going back to early 1900s.
The dudes in 1904.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where was the? What did you point out?
Were they missing? I made the joke. I was like, I don't, "Where's the black guy? What's going on here?"
There were no black firemen.
Yeah.
I was like, Daryl, it's the 50s. Anyway,
but to your point, I did like that opening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, going back to the good things that this movie did, it had an air of chill. You know, not pun not intended,
right?
Where there were moments where this seemed like a horror movie, and that's sprinkled throughout. And it was one of those things where it got my attention, and it told a story without a lot of dialogue.
Mm. And then the exposition kicks in.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very good opening.
I agree. Yeah.
Really,
yeah,
really strong opening.
That opening and then the Hell's Kitchen sewer dragon, I thought were great. Mm-hmm. Like it started off on the right foot and then they literally slammed their foot on the brake and they're like, hold on.
Yeah.
We got a whole lot of talking to do. I think doing Phoebe as a malcontent was a huge mistake. I think sidelighting Phoebe to make Phoebe a huge malcontent was a big mistake. And I feel like it was all done so they could have a pseudo lesbian ship with a ghost.
So yeah, we're talking about the Melody.
Yeah.
Arc.
Yeah. The 80-year-old ghost who's grooming a 16-year-old girl. It was gross. Yeah,
she's forever 16.
David Boreanaz is an angel is forever like 22, but he's still 500 years old trying to have sex with a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
And nobody thought that was an
issue. No, I've always called that out. So it's a, there were two, for me, when it came to Phoebe, there were two kind of inappropriate relationships. There was the ghost, and then I feel like Gary, it's like, do you like the mom or do you like Phoebe, dude? Which one is it?
I don't know.
It was just kind of gross.
I don't think I saw the Gary as much as
it was. You know, part of it was like when he's talking to her when she wasn't in the room, and it was just a very like
that moment
teen romance thing. Well, like it's something you'd see on the CW. I can see podcasts doing that. Like I love you, and then she's not there.
That moment actually reminded me of a movie I really like, which is Into the Spider-Verse, the first one. When Miles's dad comes to him.
Yeah.
That's what I saw when I saw that. It's him. And then at the end, you know, she calls him dad, which, spoiler.
But, right.
which was great. I mean, it was where, nice. It was just kind of weird. There was just a weird vibe because he's like he's always the way he defends her too. It's just like, and maybe it's just kind of like the hyper like conscious like world we live in with that now. And it's like, you're not her dad. We don't know what the relationship with the mom with Kelly is.
Kelly.
Other than like you were both ghost dogs and you boned.
Ghost dog. That was great.
I like it when he like we got some action and they did the little like fist bump. That was funny. But it's like I wanted to see more between the two of them. More romance.
Great chemistry. You know?
Right. They do. You're right. Yeah. I mean, Carrie Coon has great chemistry with
him. I mean, it's Ant-Man and Proxima Midnight. Come on.
True. Yeah. Very true. And they've shared the screen before in Marvel. Yeah. So.
Well, I'm going on record. I disagree with the weird. I'm not quite sure where you're coming from.
I don't know. It was just like a weird relationship.
Well, going back to Afterlife and Gary having respect for science punk rock, and he's always respected this little girl to be like, you're different, you're weird,
and he probably, looking back on, and again, we know nothing about his life.
Right, before. We know nothing but about Gary. He has no backstory.
It seems like the way, especially going back to Afterlife. He can relate to that because he was probably that nerdy kid who got picked on and bullied or ignored.
Right.
And so he finds someone.
And now he's Galactic.
And, Paul Rudd. Phoebe's not had friends. Like, that was a pretty consistent thread from the last.
And this really one. Liked how it opened with her with the joke and that little wink that McKenna Grace does. It's like adorable. It's
it's good.
Yes, that is. This is someone who knows she's not funny and knows no one else gets the joke.
But the wink
is like, it's right.
Is that a joke?
Yeah.
I love that.
I winked.
And then Paul, or Gary laughs. I don't know. It was just kind of like, there was just some like weird moments like with that. Like obviously with Melody was weird. And
that's like, this is how I break down Frozen Empire.
Yeah.
You know, it's, they had to create an instance for Phoebe to effectively stop participating in Ghostbusting.
Yeah.
And then
enter Peck.
Right. So that was a decision that was on Walter Peck's part. I think the improvement would have been, and I said this to you, allow that to be her choice.
And
create some inner conflict with her, because it's clear from Afterlife to this film that she has a defined different relationship with the paranormal, starting with her grandfather and now introduction of the Melody character. So like create like some inner conflict saying, I'm a part of this organization that basically jails ghosts.
I would have liked to have seen from that just more of her like kind of talking to Egon. Like, knowing he's not there, but, like, you know, almost like...
Talk to me, Egon.
But almost like, you know...
You're my... Yeah.
Almost like grandfather.
Yeah.
I'm trying to finish your... I'm going to finish your story.
I mean, you could see it clearly that when Melody's character was introduced, that whole thing going back to Afterlife and the chess game that she played with Egon, that's what she was expecting.
Yeah.
You know, she's reaching out to her grandfather,
and
then Melody shows up.
And honestly, for a second, I thought that's where they were going to do something like that.
And I'm glad that they didn't.
I'm really glad that they didn't.
Yeah.
Like, because a silent Egon would have just been...
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I
because
think
we got the four, four Herald at the end of Afterlife.
Yeah, that was
just like we got the four Ivan on this one.
The send off we needed.
The character don't had a great, have to go back. Like, and he was revered for the most part in this one, other than by Walter Peck, obviously. But, you know, I don't know. The other thing I find funny with the whole like Spangler clan, because like nobody wants to be a Gunderson, right? Or Gruberson.
Gruberson.
It's like they're all of a sudden like the first family of Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's like, okay. Like,
yeah.
Whatever. It's fine. But.
Let's dive in a little bit more. Because one thing that after the first viewing to the second is establishing a timeline.
Yeah.
Like, and that's where on the second viewing, I was being a little bit more aware of that because, you know, initially, I'm like, okay, have they been at the fire house for? Yeah, and even this, they kind of flubbed it a couple.
Yeah,
because they said initially have had the keys for a year, right, and then saying 2 years.
Yeah,
and why I'm bringing that up is, oh, okay, convenient to the plot line of this one. Oh, we have this entire secret facility that you've never seen.
Right. And and the firehouse being the nexus of all paranormal activity in the world, apparently.
The Hellmouth.
It is a Hellmouth. They refused to upgrade anything. Like, it was just, I don't know. There were so many different MacGuffins in this movie.
Oh, yeah, big time.
It's like I'm good if there's, like, one MacGuffin. But when there was the matchbook, there was the, you know, what did you call it? The Q for the paranormal stuff. You were
Q branch.
Yeah, Q branch. You know, and then, you know, the old lady's brass room, like all MacGuffin-y stuff in there, like, you know, and it's like too much. Yeah. Like, the guy didn't need to stick the horns into his head. That was dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of a cool visual, but it was just dumb. It's like, I don't think that's how that works once you lose your horns. Yeah. Like,
well,
are you not impaling your brain?
Totally different movie, but I liked how in Hellboy, how he sawed off his own horn. And then they grew back once he, for that moment, accepted what he was.
He had the crown.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty slick.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. But, he always shaved them down.
Yeah. But in this, like, kind of going back to some of the MacGuffin talk, that's probably some of my biggest issues.
Yeah.
For instance, I really wanted to see more with, you know, Carrie and Gary.
Yeah.
And just them as a dynamic that, yeah, like you said, they've been this thing has been going on for a couple years now.
Right.
I wanted to see more of those four and how they interact than what we got.
Oh, 100%.
Well, I think we agreed. You and I haven't.
You know, Trevor Friend.
Let's talk about Finn Wolfhard for a second. Like, this is the last franchise he's going to be a part of because he is so awkward looking now. And, like, he was kind of a cute kid when he was Mike on Stranger Danger Things. But,
so, like, you know, to Daryl's point, it's like the family for the majority of this film, it's everybody's fragmented and they're following their own little.
Yeah, they each have their own little mission, side mission.
Yeah, and that's not what, especially after watching Afterlife, because you don't get much between Carrie and Gary in that one. It reminded me of the Avengers and what what's our boy Hawkeye said, Jeremy Renner. He was like, because he was mind controlled most of that movie, the initial movie, and he's like, that's not what he came to, you know, Marvel for, is just to, and that's what it kind of reminded me of, because this second movie should have been seeing more about them and more how they were, how they did all of this stuff. And then, to your point, you've been in the city for how long?
So here's how you reduce all, or here's how you make that happen. You get rid of Lucky, you get rid of Podcast, you get rid of Ray, you throw Patton Oswalt into a volcano, and you go from there. Yes. Like, you can have the OG Ghostbusters should have been up and, like, we're going to go to the roof, and the family should have been the ones doing the rest of the stuff in the on the first floor and in the basement at the end.
There were a lot, like, of superfluous characters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the fact that Dan Aykroyd was
very present
executive producer is, like, he was in there way too much.
He's very present.
It's like a certain wrestler who's on the board of a certain company who has come back and has taken over with nothing but cringe. I'm talking about The Croc.
Yeah,
that's a very good comparison. You
know, he can't talk anymore. He definitely can't wrestle anymore. And, like, you know, like, yeah, Dan Aykroyd is always going to be funny. And Dan Aykroyd is always going to be Ray Stantz, right?
Right.
But Ray did not need to have the level of participation in this movie he had. What they, like, if anything, he should have just been what Patton Oswalt's point was.
Exactly.
They should have brought that thing to Ray. They should have found that.
Yes.
Like, you know, not Naheem, or what was Camille's name?
Nadim.
Yeah. Showing up like, hey, I got this stuff to sell. Stuff. 50 bucks. Yeah. Oh, 30. There was 30 bucks, then 50. And he's like, how about 60? Yeah. Like, you know, the whole Firemaster thing, it's like, okay, I thought we had the Gatekeeper and Keymaster again last time. Like, are we just going to, when are we going to have the earthbending? Because we had a bunch of water bending, you know, with ice, and a bunch of fire bending with the Firemaster.
I did ask Brian if this is the best live action Avatar.
No, it is, like, honestly, it is the bullshit Netflix series that is the best firebending.
Yeah, that was nice. Very nice.
So maybe Pyro from X2.
Right. So there's a lot of threads going on. Yeah, lots of threads going on. A little more than superfluous. Even from the perspective of, you know, we have Afterlife. It's questionable if the original Ghostbusters even needed to be introduced.
No.
I mean, that was very last second.
Oh, in Afterlife. Right. Yeah.
And my understanding is that the original structure of that film, quite different, that the post-credit scene with Winston and Janine was actually supposed to happen much earlier.
Okay.
Anyway, where I'm going with this. Passing of the baton. Mm-hmm. Passing of the baton.
We didn't get that.
No.
Again.
You know, it's like, and right now, the series is in conflict with itself. It's like, okay, do you want to introduce a new generation of characters or not? Yeah. And this was very much, I think, a decision.
There was a scene that highlighted it more than anything else when she shot Fortitude in the face. Mm. And he's like, you shot the lion in there, the lion in the face.
Right.
It's like, the lion had been possessed.
Ray.
Yeah. You saved Ray. That scene made zero, that is who wrote this? This was Gary Keenan and Jason Reitman. Gil Keenan and Jason Reitman wrote this. It's like, you guys don't know better? Jason Reitman is a prolific writer.
Yeah.
Like, the inconsistencies. It's like, were you guys going back and editing things and you forgot what you did?
Apparently,
like,
that there were reshoots.
Is this a first draft?
No.
Is this The Last Jedi where you just did one draft said, let's just shit all over the screen?
Yeah. I'd like to understand what exactly was reshot.
There's a lot of just disconnected threads to do
in 115 minutes.
Well,
that, they did too much in 115 minutes. And Daryl, I'd been saying this to Brian. Frozen Empire is a very long episode of television.
Yes.
And
this is probably three episodes of TV.
I mean, you could have done it justice if this were, say, your typical 8-part miniseries series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you could follow all of these distinct threads of establishing the order.
Dune should never be a movie. Dune should be a TV show.
We don't disagree. You know, establishing the order of the firebenders.
Yeah.
Establishing some of the
Game
more
of Thrones movie, how bad it would be.
Oh, terrible. Yeah. You just can't, like, and that's where exposition just became just too much.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're over explaining to close some of these plot lines and trying to do it all in 150 minutes while introducing some conflict that only happens until the last 20.
Right.
You know, it's like you call it Frozen Empire. Empire wasn't frozen until the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like,
parts of the Empire kept freezing randomly, like the little sewers.
And that I picked up much more on the second viewing. You know, it's like.
But yeah, there was not a lot of freezing going on.
No.
It was very hot July.
And I guess it wasn't too cold because people were still outside on the street.
Yeah.
While that
with
was
no
on.
Coats on. Frozen Empire, every single one of those people on the streets should have frozen.
It should have been like day after tomorrow.
Yeah, it should have been cataclysmic.
But not killing them because, you know, it's PG, whatever, PG-13. Right.
You know, what I really was expecting, and then I'll get your guys' perspective. It's, okay, great. The cold open, awesome. Mm-hmm. Then, okay, you have your first, you could do the first 30 minutes the same. Like all the same, but then you know you got to throw a peck out of it.
You got to bring that last 20 minutes way earlier in the movie.
Like right at the 40 minute mark.
Like you need to break right. that up too. You need to have them fight him where nothing works against him. And then they retreat from the firehouse. And then,
where are you going to go? Oh, this facility.
Right.
For whatever reason.
And then they go and they brass plate everything.
Wait.
That, yes. They had the she made the concoction.
Right. There was more than enough brass to plate everything.
And more than enough time.
Yes.
And they talked about brass throughout.
Yeah, constantly.
They knew.
So, especially psychokinetically charged brass, which, you know, it's like, come on, fuck off. Like,
I guess if this is what you're going to do, fuck firehouse, I guess.
Well, no, but fuck you that they didn't do all of their proton packs.
Yes.
Right.
Also, every time I hear psychokinetic, I can't help but think M. Bison from Street Fighter. My psycho crusher.
So.
And then, let every bit of the last 20 happen at the 35-40 minute mark.
Yeah.
And then get the old crew, like,
kill them all off.
Well, seriously, get them seeking out them? Nadim. Because they would have the known of death. This order of fire masters.
Yes. And to that point,
I like that.
The biggest thing is, and what you're saying is, when you're going against an entity like something this massive, like Garaka's supposed to be all of this, you should have it where the heroes get their asses handed to them.
Right.
And they have to regroup. They didn't do that. And again, you didn't really do that in Afterlife either.
Right.
But, okay, I can...
And let the OG guys get their asses handed to them.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That would have been awesome. That would have actually made Phoebe and her...
with the brass.
Her significant contribution, even though she's like a 15-year-old girl... as like the real, you know, continuation of Egon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, it's,
I mean, she has the hair and the glasses. And,
right.
You know,
so, you know, brain. She would have had this idea, like, let's do this. Mm-hmm. And then.
Right.
And then bring, you know, and then the they new come family in and they back save, in and
they save the OGs.
But
that's how you pass the torch. Then Winston's like, well, you guys should have this facility.
It
closes with them,
right?
You know, kind of Agents of Shielding it, and like, oh yeah, this is the new Ghostbusters headquarters, and you know, Phoebe is like directing traffic, and Finn just becomes a janitor, like he's supposed to, or Trevor, sorry, is just the janitor of the Ghostbusters. So, I did think it was especially harsh when she was like, if you weren't a Spangler, you'd be answering our phones to Callie, and like, she should have got smacked in the mouth for that.
Yeah, that was. So,
although I will say the one thing I did enjoy when they're like, don't say it or don't do it. Like she obviously said something horrible to Callie that we didn't see. And she obviously punched Peck in the face.
And they did that twice.
I know. Yeah. And I loved it.
I love the off-screen.
I really like that stuff. That is fun. That is good storytelling because it's like.
You don't have to see it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to explain it either. Right. Yeah. It became a post joke.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, I really thought you were gonna go.
The other thing I really loved is when Winston said we answered the call.
We answered the call.
And that was just sliding the knife into Paul Feig and turning it a little more.
Yeah.
Because fuck Paul Feig.
There was a couple of things. Like Nadim saying, I am a god. Mm-hmm. Like I'm like,
Wait, was that from After or from Answer the Call?
No. This is
because I didn't watch the
classic Gozer.
Well, yeah, are I know you that, but
I
yeah,
mean, it's
yeah. So, but no, I didn't know if that was something from the Femme Busters.
No.
So. Yeah, a movie like this, it's more disappointing because you can see the nuggets of where it could have been.
Yep.
So
it's just when. And again, these things aren't like us picking things apart like at a minute level. These are things that are glaringly obvious, and it's I've seen this so much recently, especially with Disney, in the sense where you watch a show or watch a movie and you sit back and you say, did they have an editing room? Did they actually talk this through? Because if some of these things, if you talk through, you'll see it right away, like, okay, this doesn't make sense.
Right.
But, and again, this is not just for Ghostbusters. Disney is pretty much not 80% of the stuff I watch with Disney, I have that thought, like right away. Mm-hmm.
It's just mismanagement of script writing, directing, and all that. And that's my most disappointing thing because, like I said, I think I rated Afterlife better than this, but I like the story idea behind this better. It's just that for me, they did not put out on screen what really could have been a good, solid movie.
100%. 100%. You know, it's an original big bad.
Mm-hmm.
Great. You know, we're not necessarily rehashing the Gozer or, hey, you know, we're bringing back Viggo the Carpathian. The
Master of Evil.
Yeah. you know, and a lot of people have said, and myself included, this is like an episode, a long episode of the real Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And I would absolutely love for this IP to transition away from film to serial television.
But where?
I absolutely would think that would work marvelously for this franchise.
Yeah.
This, again, in the right hands, obviously, but especially how with the way it ends and the fact that pretty much all the ghosts are out. You know, yes, they stop the big bat. Talk about a great avenue for serialized television.
Yeah. You have the haunt of the week. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you can do some things where every so often you have an old cast member, mm-hmm. like tell a story about them, mm-hmm. or, you know, you could do so much.
So just real quick, you gave Afterlife a 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it a 6 out of 10 and you gave it a 7 out of 10.
I did give it a 7.
So
yeah, that's yeah.
But where? So because like right now Sony doesn't have any kind of like, you know, like I could see this on Netflix. I think unfortunately it would end up on Stars, so it'd be low budget. It would be one season and then they would cancel it.
Yeah.
Whereas like I think, you know, looking at this show,
do an Ash versus Evil Dead treatment.
But that was on Stars too.
Yeah, it was on Stars.
So this had $100 million price tag just for production. So marketing for this movie was probably another $100 million.
You think so? I don't think it was overly marketed.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. But Afterlife was a $75 million budget.
Yeah.
And they're on track to do about the same. Afterlife did $45 million in its opening weekend. Right now they're saying this is between 43 and 45. It only did 4.7 on Thursday, which is bad. Mm. Based on the number of people in the theater, the two times we've seen it.
Much more today.
But it's a Saturday at noon.
That's true. We did see it at 8 o'clock.
And I'm going to say this is probably, if this comes in at 42, they should be really happy. I think this might come in at 37, which is apocalyptic for them. If it comes in at 45, it's still apocalyptic for them because about 25% less people saw this movie because of the change ticket prices from 21 to 24.
Right.
So you look at the change in ticket prices from 84 to 24, like millions of more people saw Ghostbusters in the theater than saw either of these two movies. And it made a fraction of $45 million in its opening weekend. So here's the thing. If this comes in low, lower than expected.
So are you getting at, will this even continue?
We're not going to see any more of this group.
You know,
I mean, the Fembusters was a nightmare at the box office for them.
That was just all sorts of nightmares. Right.
But they lost, $50, $60 million on that movie. This is a $100 million movie. They're not going to lose $100 million. You know, this isn't like Marvel coming out like, oh, well, the budget for this was $250, but it cost $310 to make.
Right.
And we needed to make close to $1 billion for it just to break even. I mean, for this to break even, $100 million, you know, the first one did $129.3 in North domestically and $204 worldwide. So that one made about, you know, probably close to $60 million. So for them to do that this time, they're going to have to go over $300 million. They're not going to get there.
Yeah.
So this movie will probably end up losing money. Not a lot, but it'll fight hard to break even. Dune just crossed 500 million, but they went over budget because their budget was 160. It was a 190 budget, and then they did at least $150 million in marketing.
Or their marketing.
And overseas, they only get a quarter of it. So it's got probably another 150 to 250 or 200 million to make just to break even.
And it's in what? Its third week?
Fourth. So it's back up to number two, though. So, yeah. I mean, there's that. But
not a whole lot out right now.
I mean, you have Kung Fu Panda 4 out right now, which is family film. Immaculate open this weekend.
Godzilla Kong next weekend.
Godzilla X Kong is next weekend.
That's what's funny. So Frozen Empire was released. Its original release was supposed to be next week.
Right.
They bumped it up a week. Was that in lieu of what?
Because of Kong.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I mean, the Universal Monster.
And that's a legendary. Or whatever.
Yeah, it's legendary. Universal legendary. I think because Monarch was so well received, and let's be honest, the Kong movies, like the Kong and Godzilla movies for this movieverse have been fun. They haven't been great, but they've been fun at least. I'm excited to go see it on the big screen.
They have to be making money and they keep making them.
I mean, it's not like Minus One where they made it for $15 million, but
excited to see
that. They're knocking these movies out for under $100 million. Yeah.
And have you seen that yet? Minus One?
No.
Oh, I loved it.
Not until September, man. Like, it's probably not going to get to us until September because it's Japanese.
Yeah, it's like I told you.
I'm buying the Blu-ray for that one.
I'm absolutely not buying the Blu-ray.
Because I'm going to buy the Blu-ray that has the color and the minus one, minus color.
Yeah. Cool.
So, but.
Like I told Brian, that the first monster movie, even though I've liked some of the other ones, the first one that I actually cared about the humans. Like
that, and Godzilla is so cute in this one. Like in the minus one, he's like adorable looking. He's like, look at his little nosy. I just want to pet him. I just want to get boop a it. Stuffed animal version and boop him constantly. Boop. Just boop, boop. Boop. Anyway, all right.
Will it continue?
Yeah, you know,
we shall see.
I don't know. I think from your point of view, from a TV show,
I'd love it.
They would it would behoove them to start over, to start fresh. Maybe recast? I don't know.
I like this cast.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Not getting Carrie Coon in a TV show. You're definitely not getting McKenna Grace in a TV show. And you're not getting Paul Rudd in a TV show.
Well, Paul Rudd's been in several TV shows.
He has, but now so you know this version. This version of this point in their careers, the three of these actors.
You'd see it as a...
it's been a couple years.
I'm talking like calendar-wise, other movies, other things that they're involved in. I don't see them.
I would see more, you're saying, with McKenna Grace. I don't know enough about...
She's diversified.
Yeah, she's been in... But
it's funny, man. Like, I mean, she's going to grow up and be a very attractive woman. And they tried to make her unattractive in this. And it's like, even with that wig, it's like, you can tell this girl is going to grow up and be beautiful.
Is it Coachella? Like, she's got a legit music career.
Yeah, she's, I mean, like,
she, yeah.
It's so funny, too, because did you guys watch Troop Zero on Amazon with her and Jim Gaffigan? What's her name? It's hilarious. She's like the little brownie, troop and, she's got the misfits that because they're trying to meet some scientist, some space scientist, and they have to sell enough cookies to get into it or whatever. And they get into it and they've got the overweight girl, the bully, the dumb girl, the girl who can't see, and then the girl that McKenna plays. And then, they get a little boy to join and they're like, nowhere does it say the Firefly girls can, or whatever they're called. The Firefly girls have to be girls. Jim Gaffigan's character is a lawyer it's in their 50s. It's really funny. It's well worth a watch.
But she's great.
In it. She's a great little actress.
Yeah.
And,
and a highlight,
Yeah. She's definitely the highlight of both movies, and she should be the main character.
Yeah.
I do think it's funny that she was fourth on the call sheet, though.
Yeah.
Because it went Paul, Carrie, Finn, then her. And it's I get Paul Rudd. He's a galactic treasure. He goes first.
True.
Carrie Coon is one of the finest actors of this generation, of our generation. Finn Wolfhard was Mike in Stranger Things. So, I mean, he's going to ride that for... as long as he can, because
that'll be one more season, maybe two.
Finn Wolfhard, Dude, hit the gym, dude. Hit the gym. Absolutely. You have you will trust me, buddy. Like the fame is not gonna like the stink of stage is not gonna be with you forever. So,
Well, the way I could see this continuing as film, don't invest in the original crew and their salaries.
Right.
Just go all in and then complete the trilogy.
Yeah.
Then figure out what comes next. Yeah. At that point,
maybe what happens is like something happens to the original crew where they just kill them off. And Winston leaves everything to Phoebe.
Hmm.
Would be a great, and that's like a symbolic passing of the torch. Maybe not the passing of the torch that we want, but enough of a passing of the torch where now Phoebe is in charge of the Q center there, and she's making new ghostbusting things. She's dealing with the existential question of, should we be busting ghosts?
Right.
Is there a way that we can help ghosts move on and find their, you know, their reason to move on? So there's a lot more story to tell if you focus on Phoebe as the main character, free of Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson,
Annie Potts. She was superfluous.
She didn't even need. She was like, oh yeah, we know. It's like, get the fuck out. Just like that's what Callie should have said to her. She should have turned around and been like, get the fuck out of here. Like, what are you doing here? Like, you were no help with helping with my dad when he died. You're less help now. Fuck off. So, like, it was all, like, the whole reason she was in the movie is so Bill Murray could come in and be like, Melnitz in uniform.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that really does harken to the IDW comics.
I get it. Yeah. But, like, here's the thing. You're the only one who read those.
Yeah.
Like, and I, there's, are those the ones I bought for you? Like,
you bought Transformers.
Oh, the Transformers Ghostbusters. Yeah. No, but like nobody read that. Like nobody read that comic.
And the trades are going for like 300 a piece.
That's because nobody read it and they only printed like 12 trades.
I have them all.
They only, no, like 12 copies of each trade. Like, I'm not saying there were 12 volumes. It was, you know,
there were a couple little homages.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ghostbusters is a fun franchise. For me, it's not even a top 10 franchise.
Yeah.
And for, you know, things that I like. So.
No, but going back to, it's one of those that has massive, massive potential still from a storytelling
perspective. 100%.
However, again, the way modern Hollywood is, do you think they can squeeze out what they should be able to squeeze out with it? Absolutely not.
Yeah,
and that's really unfortunate.
Maybe if Sony lets it go to somebody else, not Disney.
Well, Ghost Corp hasn't met its potential.
Yeah,
you know, and it's unfortunate that Ivan Reitman passed away. So
who else is involved? Is that Jason now? Is this Jason and Gil? Are they Ghost Corp?
I don't know. Because
Gil wrote the other movie too with Jason.
Yeah. That's a great question. I mean, I have to imagine that Jason's in the lead there, but I mean, also you've got Sony involvement,
but yeah, Ghost Corps, it's a subsidiary. Oh, the key people are Dan Aykroyd and Jason Reitman.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, as long as Dan Aykroyd's involved, we're not going
to get. Oh, and Dan will always have to be.
Yeah.
He's the heart of this entire IP.
I get it. But like he can be writing it. He doesn't need to be in it.
We just need to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway. All right. Thank you for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
This was fun.
Good talk.
We should do more. Like, you should come and do more stuff with us.
Special guest.
So
yeah.
I mean, we can talk about other stuff that's fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Like making fun of Finn Wolfhard.
It's so easy.
He's got such a great name too. Like Finn Wolfhard. I mean, it's a cool name. It is like, dude, like yeah.
But his middle name's like Eugene or something.
Elwood. I go by Dalton. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Been a blast.
Thank you, Daryl.
Daryl and I are going to be back in the middle of the week for an anime-only thing. We are going to talk about Invincible and X-Men 97.
I think he just said anime-only.
Well, that's animated.
Okay.
So
it's not anime.
Yeah, I don't watch that anime bullshit. Anyway, I was so disappointed in her.
He doesn't know that Avatar is basically.
It is not anime. We have talked about this. We have put it to bed.
Technical perspective, he is right. It's not
anime. It is not anime.
Everything else. Because
it was a Western studio. Right.
It wasn't done in Japan. Yeah. There's no manga.
He is really on that.
It is not anime.
Yeah.
Like,
but the spirit of it.
They do full-fledged fight scenes where they don't just reuse the same still shot of someone jumping with like lines coming out.
This is someone who's never watched anime.
Look,
did you ever cover Blue-Eyed Samurai?
No, that was amazing.
Because I haven't watched it.
Come on.
Yet.
Dude, amazing. Plus one. Amazing.
What?
It was in my top five.
Yeah. For 2023.
Yeah, I was just gonna say you're gonna do
I did not have Netflix until 2024. Like
it, but you didn't realize, right?
No. That was Stars that I still have.
Oh, Stars. Okay.
I thought I canceled it after
some of the best deals. Character writing that I've seen in a long time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's on my list.
Yes. It was one of those
I have a ton of stuff on my list that I'm just, you know, but I'm trying to watch less stuff because, like, plus, like, I go into an office part of the time now, so I can't just sit and watch work.
I had to go into the office this week, so.
Yeah.
But X-Men 97 and Invincible midweek, and then we're going to come back with Roadhouse, and we're going to double up on Shogun.
And Masters of the Air.
And we're going to do a season review of Masters of the Air. Have you watched that one yet?
Mm-mm.
Amazing.
Yes.
So I go the Pacific, Band of Brothers, Masters of the Air, but it's like
Pacific first, huh?
I love the Pacific. It's like 1A, 1AA. It is varying degrees, but Masters of the Air is great. And then we might try and watch the Bloody Hundred documentary to throw in there as well. But if not, you know, you should definitely check both of those things out. But yeah, dude, you should definitely watch Masters of the Air.
That's Apple.
Yeah. Austin Butler is going to be the biggest star in Hollywood in 5 years.
You've got a less than crush. 5 years. I know this.
No, it's a Chris. It's like Chris, it's the Chris Pratt thing. It's like Chris Pratt like went from doing what he was doing to doing what he is, and he became the biggest male star in Hollywood for several years. To the point now, he's the voice of Garfield.
I mean, he was in Mario.
It's a Mia Mario.
Hey, well, we could do a whole tie-in Ghostbusters and Garfield. Oh, you don't know what I'm talking about.
I do not, but we're going to call
it there.
We're going to call it there.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. I do not know. Daryl doesn't know either. I can tell by the look on his face. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We will be back in a few days. Carlo will hopefully come back sooner rather than later because this is fun, and we will see you later.
See you.
The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Sunday on Apple Podcast, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcast, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. This show is hosted by Daryl Jasper and me, Brian Tudor. To find more information about the show, visit us at infamouspodcast.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Infamous Podcast to keep up with the show. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons and are looking for help to grow the show to bring you more of the content you want to hear. Music for this podcast is provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. So, whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.